Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to our Christmas episode 2018. I wish you all the best for this very special event. Merry Christmas, and I hope you are able to wind down and spend quality time with your family and loved ones. We were able to have Missy MS come from the Historical Society of Ottertail County, and she will share some of the local Christmas stories with you. So I was really happy for her to join, and I particularly like this time of the year very much, because we can reflect on what has happened all year long and what our plans may be for next year. And I must admit, it was a very successful year, 2018. Lots of things happened, good things, some sad things. I don't know if it was bad things, but a lot of things, as every year. And it was overall another very good year. We are in a safe place here, in a good spot, and I hope we would all agree with that. We enjoy lakes, country, year round, and I hope you find this to be a very good year 2018 as well. And I wish you again a Merry Christmas and all the best for 2019 to come. And I don't want to keep this much longer, to enjoy this recording with Missy with a Christmas special. Have a wonderful weekend ahead. Hello and welcome to our podcast Christmas special here with Missy MS from the Historical Society of Ottertail County. Hello, Missy.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you too and everybody. Thanks for coming back. You have been with us a few weeks, a month, in fact, for Halloween.
That's
special.
Right. So it's a different holiday now.
A different holiday, and we agreed to do this throughout the year and on multiple occasions, and highlight, spotlight Ottertail County historic stories, anything from culture, society, and those things in this year to come, 2019, and the future.
Right.
And yeah, you came to speak about local Christmas events, or I don't even know yet. I'm happy to hear. So I'll let you lead the program.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes. Well, in the course of the 20 years that I've worked at the Historical Society, as I came across stories about Christmas, whether it was reading someone's diary or in a newspaper article, I just collected those and put them aside. And so this is a time of the year to pull those stories out about Christmas, or about December, New Year's as well, and kind of celebrate how people celebrated in the past. And it is a little bit different from the way we celebrate now.
Yeah, okay, that's very interesting to learn. One step back for the people that are tuning in new. Your role at the Historical Society, who is Missy, real quick?
She is the education coordinator for the Historical Society. And so a lot of my job is, I would say half the time I'm there at the museum, whether it's a school field trip or writing. I do a lot of writing for different publications or doing research. And then the rest of the time, I'm out in the county giving programs, whether it's at a school, or today I'll be visiting a care home for senior citizens. I speak to service groups as well. So all over Ottertail County, but also in other counties as well. Not every county historical society is fortunate enough to be able to have an educator on the payroll.
So we are really fortunate to have you.
Not me myself necessarily, but the idea of a museum educator, that's where we really are lucky to have that the board of directors feels that that's an important service, or a part of their role of disseminating the history of Ottertail County.
And I think Christmas, at least where I'm from, we always reflect and kind of come to our senses what we have and what we don't have. And I think it's of great value to protect the future of the Historical Society for Ottertail County too. And I think you live a lot of donations.
Right.
And it's a good moment to share that. I know we are a consuming a society, let's say, unfortunately at times, but for our children's sake and for our own future, we do want to remember the history. And I think you protect that. You said you write a lot, so your function and the organization is very relevant for future generations to come to know where we have been coming from.
And that is a part of the job that I really love, is going and speaking to school groups and bringing artifacts. I mean, I think it really makes history come alive for students, and then to tell them stories of people that lived right here. Recently, I was in New York Mills, and I had a fifth grader who, at the end of my program on the fur traders that lived here and all the different lakes and so on, the animals and the natural history, who raised his hand and he said, "I think that's awesome that there's great history in Minnesota, but it's even more awesome that these famous people lived right here where we live in Ottertail County." And I said, "Yes, you." Yeah, he gets it. Yes,
you were able to
where
touch.
We live, the history is important too, our local history.
Absolutely. I mean, we learn from it. We live off it. It's building traditions. It is very relevant to us to also maybe have our core values defined.
Right. And we share a history with the other counties in this area too, whether it's Becker County, Detroit Lakes, Wadena County, Grant County, Wilkin County. I mean, the surrounding counties around, we share this similar history as well, West Central Minnesota, the Lakes Country.
Yeah.
So I appreciate being able to go to other places as well. Yeah.
Well, I really am happy and glad that we are able and you're willing to record for us for future people to play it at any time. We are building this archive of history lessons
right.
For our local stories. So yeah, thank you. But
well, thank you.
Christmas it is.
Yes. Okay. Fantastic. And like I said, I've drawn a lot of these stories from publications that we have at the museum. And that's another aspect. I mean, if people hear something, we might actually have that book in the gift shop at the museum. And I think books are a fantastic Christmas present.
Yes.
If you're going to give something that will last a long time, that's not plastic, it's useful, and you can share it. Again, after you've read it, you can give it to someone else. I love books at Christmas time. And I'd say one of my favorite books of Ottertail County history is called Ever the Land. And it's written by Reuben Parsons, but it's about his family who came from Sweden. And they were named Anna and Per Persson. And the Persons were Swedish immigrants who arrived in 1869. And for a lot of those early immigrants to Ottertail County, the idea of celebrating Christmas, how are we going to do this? Because where I might be able to call my mother, they're isolated where they lived many times, except for their neighbors. And they didn't have access maybe to the traditional foods that they had eaten, whether it was Germany or Denmark or Sweden. And so what were they going to do? And so this is a great story. I'll just read some of this from 1869. December weather had turned cold, bitterly cold by Swedish standards. The ground had frozen several feet deep, and snow had begun to accumulate so that the landscape lay white. A secret dread of Christmas set in. How does one honor and enjoy Christmas in a wilderness? Anderson, who was a neighbor, conceived innovations, and all the elders assisted with their realization. He would see to it that the children had a Christmas. He found and brought home a thick-crowned red hawthorn apple for a Christmas tree. And he walked to Clitheroe and got some papers of various colors, not so bright as he wished, but acceptable. And of this he helped the girls make daisy chains using flower paste. And with these they festooned the little tree. He bought enough bright-colored calico so Anna could make each girl a new rag doll, which he stuffed with hay. Anna stitched the dolls by candlelight after her daughters lay asleep. They would be surprised. Johnson, another neighbor, went to Clitheroe and bought a fishing line and a pair of hooks. Anna furnished pieces of pork rind with some fat attached for bait. He took several pike walleye, threw a hole in the ice, and they served in lieu of lutefisk for supper on Christmas Eve. There was no rice pudding or lingonberries for dessert, but no one commented on the deficiency. Egg custard with burnt sugar was eaten instead. And after Christmas Eve supper, the assembly sang Swedish hymns and Christmas songs, and deny as they would, their tender thoughts were of the old country almost half a world away. Finally, Anderson said, "We must sing one last song and go to bed. We must sing Glada Yule Aften, Joyous Christmas Eve." They sang the old favorite so that the little log cabin fairly vibrated, and not one of the adults concluded it with dry eyes. And I think that that's a similar story. I mean, that story was repeated all over the Lakes Country. So neighbors gathering, and then a simple
community.
Foods. Yeah, community, and then being able to, I mean, there's no priest or there's no pastor to, you know, there's no churches yet, really. You're going to have to celebrate it in a new way. And they said, too, that on New Year's Eve, they had a prairie chicken feast, so...
Okay.
I don't know what would be a New Year's Eve celebration maybe in Sweden
stuck
at that time.
Stuck out to me, though, Swedish. Is in our local county a higher rate of Swedish immigrants? Because we always talk Norwegian and German, but
right.
Swedish?
There were a lot of Swedes that settled in Otertail County, too, especially in the Clitheroe area for whatever reason.
That was the first establishment.
Well,
right?
Parker's Prairie, there is actually a Otertail County Historical Society monument to the number of Swedes that lived over in the eastern part of the county over there. You can find that marker. But they're sprinkled all over, right? A lot in Fergus Falls as well of Swedes. Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes, it's awesome.
Finns also.
Yes. And and that's an interesting story, too. I mean, that maybe that can be another talk for another day of how people from different countries, how they found their community.
Uh-huh.
How
Little Chinatown.
Did... Right.
Finn and New York Mills?
Right. New York Mills, Deer Creek area, too. And how, I mean, a lot of Irish people in Gorman Township. Gorman is named for an Irish immigrant there, too. Fergus Falls had a lot of Germans living in it.
Yeah.
And there, you can find a lot of newspaper advertisements and some writing, just like in Perham, in those old papers, in Fergus Falls papers.
Still in German?
In German, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I should try that today.
You should. Maybe we should call you sometime if we need to have something translated.
That's
right?
Absolutely no problem.
Because it's not just the words. I mean, we could use Google Translate probably,
sure.
But it's also the writing. The it's a different font, right?
Yeah, it is. It is not so easy to read at times. Yeah.
No,
but
it's not.
I can a little bit. Yeah.
All right, we have a new resource. We have a new volunteer for the museum. When that happens, that's fantastic. So the Pearsons, that's a whole other story too. Maybe that would be a part two. What happened to the Pearson family?
Okay,
because Anna didn't survive very long here in the wilderness.
Okay.
Yeah. But the first colony in Otertail County, the first were the Cutlerites, and I've talked about them before. They did center over by Clitheroe. That's
right.
Where, and they arrived in 1865. And
okay.
The Cutlerites were an offshoot branch of the Mormon Church, the Latter-day Saints. And instead of going to Utah with Brigham Young, they had gone first from Missouri to Iowa, to Iowa, and then come from Iowa to Otertail County.
Uh-huh.
They had, and their leader, that's what the reason they're called the Cutlerites is they had a spiritual leader called Alpheus Cutler,
uh-huh.
And he had a vision that they would come to a place between two lakes in Minnesota. And so they did. They settled between Battle Lake and Clitheroe Lake. That's where the old town Clitheroe is. Mm-hmm. And so we have a story from them too. And they too, I mean, there really were no stores here. They had to be self-sufficient when they arrived. They brought their flock of sheep because they were planning to make their own clothing. One of their number was a furniture maker. That's where they got their first chairs and so on. They were a really self-sufficient group. And
it's a Christmas story, though.
This is a Christmas story, right. And they wrote their own book. They collected a lot of their own stories in another publication.
So they're Christian.
They are.
Because obviously Christmas is
Christmas. And they did celebrate Christmas, right.
Okay.
So we have a book of their stories called The Old Clitheroe Storybook. Mm-hmm. So this is from there. And it was written by Alta Kimber. And she said she recalls the first Christmas when she and her sister wished, hoped, and waited for toboggan caps. I think that's like a beanie cap, a knit cap with one of those pom-poms on top. And kind of a stocking cap with a top that folded to the front and fastened with a pom-pom. A young wife in the community had received one from her husband. And so the Kimber girls wanted nothing else for Christmas. And Christmas morning, they hurried down to the hazel bush. So instead of, and here's another variation of a Christmas tree, right? Mm-hmm. There weren't nearly as many trees growing in Otter Tail County as there are now. Of course, up by here, by Perham and Detroit Lakes, a lot of pine trees. That's where we get Pine Lake and so on. But down at Clitheroe, not so much. They were using hazel bushes for Christmas trees.
What is this now?
I don't know. A hazel tree. We'd have to get a naturalist in here to help us with that. So they came running down to their version of a Christmas tree to see two soft wool objects hanging from the tree. What, the caps, they thought. No, it was just two skeins of yarn to be used by their mother for knitting. And it was a disappointment until a colored picture book under the tree turned out to be the story of Simple Simon that their father read and reread until all the family knew it by heart. So that idea, too, that mother would get yarn that she's going to have to work to put in to make something with, and then that the whole entire family would get one Christmas present, right? That it's, again, a book, but that can be reread over and over. Not toys, not some of the things that we ask for now or that children ask for. They didn't get what they wanted, but they got a book. Mm-hmm. I've read a story. I have a story, and I'm not sure if I brought it, of a little girl who, this is in Battle Lake, and they had a large community Christmas at the church there. And parents must have, or community members bought toys for each child that showed up. And this little girl got a doll. And she said that she got that same doll every Christmas after that. Her parents gave her the same toy every year. One toy forever. Now, I also have some sad stories here, too. Not everybody loves Christmas, right? We all know the story of Scrooge and the Grinch. And Otter Tail County has their own version of the Grinch. Uh-huh. And his name was R.J. Angus. And he's actually related to the Historical Society because even though he didn't like to give gifts at Christmas, he was very generous in helping the Historical Society create their collection in the early days.
This is a true story?
This is a true story, yep. And this is from 1913. So thinking back then, and the president at that time was Woodrow Wilson. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Woodrow Wilson started something called the SPUG movement, an S-P-U-G movement, which means the Society for the Prevention of Useless Giving of Gifts.
Really?
Yes. So R.J. Angus in Fergus Falls.
105 years ago.
Yes, he thought that was a fantastic idea. So he wrote this letter to one of the Fergus Falls papers, the Fergus Falls Journal. I must have been the prime mover in this SPUG campaign as I have preached this doctrine for the past 5 years. I am glad to see that it is becoming a national movement, and I hope that it will be taken up here at home. The amount of useless worry and energy that is expended each year, more especially by the feminine portion of our families, in keeping up with Lizzie, and I should say he never was married, so. So I wonder why, right? In the matter of barter of gifts at the Christmas season renders the season, which ought to be one of peace and joy, burdensome in the extreme to many. I trust the SPUG movement will have an ever-increasing number of adherents here. Prosper the work. Remember the children in the joyful spirit of Christmas. Try, to some degree, to impart the Christmas joys to those whose necessities render the enjoyment of the festive season hard. But frown upon the useless barter of gifts, which impart neither joy to the giver or recipient. R. J. Angus. Yeah, he never married, so. He did live with his sister, though, and I wonder if she ever, I hope he gave her a gift, because putting up with him was probably horrible.
Yeah. Maybe she got a break over Christmas, he left, so that was
maybe, that would be awesome. Just thinking back to him. I have also found other stories. He talked a little bit in there about families or people who can't afford a expensive Christmas and making Christmas a little more enjoyable for those people. And I did find...
Well, back in the day, I mean, the majority of the people was fairly poor.
Right.
I mean, we were hardworking farmers, defined poor, but they were of I guess, little means or
right.
needs. And
not a lot of extra income.
No.
That can be spent on useless things. Like he said, useless gift giving.
Yeah.
And so gifts were often practical, right? I mean, my father-in-law often talks about they got often socks and underwear
sure.
for Christmas.
Absolutely.
Which my kids, if they saw that when they opened a box, would be unhappy. Yeah, they would be disappointed
right.
if that was what they got. But this is a story that was written by Mildred Gosland. And Mildred grew up on a farm near Battle Lake. And she wrote a book called Mindy about her memories of growing up there. And this is from her book. The highlight of the years in the 1930s where I grew up, for both children and adults, was Christmas. It topped everything. Birthdays, Thanksgiving, Easter, Halloween, and the 4th of July. It wasn't that Christmas were so very remarkable then, but nothing else was celebrated as much. The rest of the year seemed harsh and drab. Looking back on it now, however, there doesn't seem to have been much fun at all to our Christmases when I was a little girl. The weather was usually too cold or unfriendly to do socializing with neighbors or relatives. We kept close to our farm and the responsibility of taking care of the animals, but it was a welcome, relaxing break in the dark winter months. Every December, shortly before Christmas, Mother would take us on a special treat of shopping at Woolworth's Five and Dime in Fergus Falls. It wasn't much of a treat for a small child like me, though, because at that time, everything was displayed off the floor far above a child's head. And I remember being bored and feeling neglected as I clung to Mother's skirts while she walked along the high, brown varnished counters that formed a long, dark corridor from my viewpoint. High up on the walls were mounted the dolls and larger toys, not intended for fondling by grubby little hands. Even the adults had to request a salesperson to get one down for closer inspection. I didn't know until I was at least 9 years old what was up on those high counters. Besides that, I don't recall that children under 12 were ever permitted to buy anything. The most unforgettable Christmas of my childhood was when I was 6 years old in 1935. So this is right the middle of the Depression.
Right.
We hadn't yet come to our special day of shopping when my sister came down with a terrible case of the flu. And it was only 5 or 6 days before Christmas, and Mother's only shopping had been by catalog, nor had she finished her usual cookie and lefse baking. Now she had to care for my sister confined to the bed, and a day or two later, Mother was just as sick with the flu. The next morning, my father was limp and white. Only I remained well. Mother was so ill for the next few days that Father had to tend to both of them. They had chills, body aches, and a high fever. They couldn't keep food down. And despite his own illness, Father had to go out to the barn and milk our 8 Holstein cows by hand, separate the milk from the cream from the milk, pump water, and feed the animals hay and silage. Silage had to be carried in heavy tubs on his shoulder from the silo outside the barn. I'll never forget how white his face was when he came in from the barn after doing his chores. He did something then that he had never done before. He stayed right in bed every hour that he wasn't helping the other sick ones or working in the barn. Christmas Eve was coming up fast. Father dragged himself out of bed and hastily put up the Christmas tree at the foot of the 2 beds in the master bedroom where all 4 of us slept now that 3 were very ill. He brought out the box of decorations and went back to bed. I decorated the tree up as far as I could, reaching from standing on a chair, mostly on one side. To me, it looked great. Even though everyone else was in bed, I was as chipper as a chickadee and quite satisfied. And I can still visualize the dusty roll logs of lint gathered on the linoleum-covered floor under the furniture, and I found this quite remarkable, because Mother had never before tolerated a speck of dust at Christmas. Whenever Mother shook the grates in the coal heater, she opened the little door below the pot-bellied front doors and scooped out the ashes into a pail. Ash dust settled on the lint and on the floor. Father took out the ashes and brought back a pail of coal and poured it noisily into the hopper. Mother put 4 boxes of Christmas gifts under the tree. There were new work stockings for Father and new slippers for her daughters and herself. These she had ordered in the mail from the Montgomery Ward catalog. Then Mother, very weak and pale, tried to help me get my Christmas Eve supper. The others could not tolerate a bit of food, but I was as hungry as usual. She cut 3 or 4 slices off of a slab of salt pork and cut up a cold boiled potato before having to collapse into bed again. I fried this in a pan on the kitchen wood range, my first attempt at cooking. I got milk from a jar in the pantry and I ate my Christmas supper all alone. When Father came in from doing the evening chores, he went right to bed. I delivered the Christmas gifts to each patient lying in bed, although they were all too ill to enjoy it then. Even so, it was Christmas Eve, and I had decorated the tree. My family was with me in the house, so I was quite content. I put on my new slippers and played under the tree with my old toys, my crayons, and a color book.
Wow.
I love that story.
That is a really nice story.
Her whole book is like that. Mindy is just a great, great book full of stories like that. Hmm. From a depression childhood, what it was like growing up here in this area.
I wish people would come and slow down a little bit more. I mean, we are this Christmas time and we are overwhelmed with all the running around, and it appears to me here nothing ever comes to a halt, and it just always speeds up and speeds up. It's
right.
It's really very stressful.
Right.
It's not healthy. We
no.
need to really slow down.
And here she was. She was very happy to have a glass of milk. And she got to cook for the first time. And it was potatoes and bacon.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And who wouldn't be satisfied with that?
Mm-hmm.
Although, like I say, there are a lot of people that enjoy lefse. She said her mother hadn't been able to make lefse. And that was a tradition I had never heard of until I moved to Minnesota. I'm not originally from here.
Mm.
I didn't know what lefse was, but there are people that, I mean, a holiday, they can't have a holiday, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas, without lefse. And so I happened to find in the Weekly Pulse, which is the newsletter that was published up at the Fergus Falls State Hospital from about 1938 until, I'm sure it was until it closed, they had a weekly newspaper. And this is an article from 1962 describing some of the preparations for the state hospital. So I don't know how many patients were there in 1962, but thinking of how big it is and then of the staff to run it, it makes this, like you said, slowing down, it must have been impossible there if you're going to plan
right.
A meal. So this is from the December 1962 weekly pulse. With Christmas only 11 days away, our kitchen and bakery are busy preparing varying types of projects for the festive week. Starting early Wednesday morning, December 19th, the annual Lefse project begins. Mrs. Verna Veggie and Alice Thompson will be in charge of making the dough. Stan Fredrickson will have charge of the rolling and frying. An extra crew is being organized to help with the project. It is expected that a day and a half will be needed to make 12 large pieces. This will make about 2,400 servings of lefse.
It's a lot of patience.
It's a lot. Well, I'm guessing I don't know how many pieces did each person get, but 2,400 pieces of lefse. The menu for Christmas Eve will be lutefisk and lefse, a real Norwegian meal. I guess not taking into account that not everyone there is not Norwegian. I either liked it or didn't, I guess. Whatever lefse is left will be served on Christmas Day for dinner along with turkey. Our bakery is preparing to make a large supply of Christmas cookies. They will be used for meals and the Christmas parties. So, I can't even imagine making 2,400 pieces of lefse. Well, I've never made any lefse, so I don't even know what that is.
I have no clue how to make it, but it's
got potato, mashed potatoes, right? And flour and cream. Does it have sugar in it? The dough? I don't know. That might be a good podcast. How to make lefse.
Maybe there's different varieties. I don't know.
I thought
it was kind of a crepe, like a rolled.
Well, it is,
thing.
But it's it is. Oh, it is kind of like that, but it's really it's
potato.
Even thinner than a crepe, and then it's not made in a pan. It's more on a griddle. I was just listening to, I belong to a group that studies antiques, and the woman who brought some of these old Scandinavian antique implements for cooking, different Christmas, like sonbockles and pepperkaker. But she said that in the old days, or she'd read a story about a woman who would make lefse for her family in North Dakota, so another pioneer. And to prepare for that, so she made the dough, but she cleaned off and used the entire top of her cast iron stove. And so she would clean it with an old newspaper, rub it, to get all whatever was on there off. And then she would wipe that down with a damp cloth. And she would wait until the coals were fairly low in the fire inside the stove. And then she would use, one of these lefse turners is quite thin and long stick, really, that were hand carved. And so that you can slip it under it's dough, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to roll it out quite thin and then transfer it using this stick to the top of the stove and flip it, I think, to cook the other side. And it has, I think, it's had to be an art to do that. And I don't know it, so.
Like a pizza baker that throws the dough.
Yeah,
very
it's kind of like
egg.
That.
Oh, yeah. Just
but it would
different.
Break and then it would be bad. I don't know. Yeah. So, what were some of the other foods that they ate? I mean, here's a story from a woman, Violet Scholberg, and she's talking about, I think, her parents, again, Norwegians, and said that Christmas was a time of great anticipation for weeks before. The mother, Otilia, would sit up late at night making rag dolls, sewing new white dresses for the girls and new suits for each boy. And it had to be white dresses. This was traditional in their family at Christmas. My mother would have never put us in white because it wouldn't have ever stayed white. But then during the day, Otilia would busy herself baking Norwegian goodies such as lefse, flatbread, fatigman, sambakles, and assorted cookies. And the father, Oli, would see to the butchering of a hog and beef and they would have been curing the meat. Sausages, hams, bacons, head cheese, and lard were provided. Some of the pork was fried and packed into crocks, covered with drippings or lard for future use. Most of the beef was canned, and if the weather was cold enough, some could be kept frozen and used in the immediate future. Nothing was wasted. Soap was made from the tallow, and the hides of the cattle were sold to the tanneries. Ole would buy dried lutefisk and soak them in water with wood ashes added. This softened the fish. It was then soaked in clear water for several days to remove the lye caused by the wood ashes. The water was poured off and drained, and fresh water added, perhaps several times a day. By Christmas Eve, the baking was done, meal preparations well under control, the bedding changed, the house scrubbed, the lamps cleaned, and the wicks trimmed. The tree was put up the day of Christmas Eve and decorated with ornaments, plus strings of popcorn and cranberries, and candles adorned the tree.
Yeah, that's still very interesting, actually. I never hear anything about the Advent, because like in Germany we have the Advent wreath, and like Advent first you put one candle on, second on the second Advent, third, it's like we say erst eins, dann zwei, dann drei, dann vier, dann steht das Christkind vor der Tür. So it's like every week is one candle, one, then two, then three, then four, and then the Christchild is at the door. So the fifth is then the Christmas Eve.
Right.
And we actually have the wreath with the candles, and then we put up the tree in Germany still to today on Christmas Eve, or like in the morning, actually. That's what we do.
Right.
And then it stays longer. Like, we don't put everything up in the beginning of December and then load it up with Christmas presents. Like, that's totally not how that is done.
No, and I think that's pretty common even, or it's encouraged in the Catholic Church, too. You're supposed to be doing Advent.
Right.
And I hadn't really put two and two together, but I was looking at someone I follow on Instagram who's in France, and Advent is avant in French, and which makes sense.
Before.
It's before Christmas,
before.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's the before part. And even at the church I go
going
to, there are no Christmas carols sung. You're not listening for 2 months of Christmas carols until Christmas carols are for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And I remember... you know, a lot of the nun, Sister Catherine, schoolmeesters, again, they don't put their Christmas tree up until Christmas Eve.
I don't like it either. I mean, it's a tradition I grew up. I can't stand it because it's just too.
You
it's
didn't
not
grow
the,
up with it. It's not,
and it's not the approach. It's not what it, I don't know. Like I like the Advent wreath. Like I remember in my high school, we had a huge one. It was probably 5 feet in diameter. And it was in the middle of the hall.
Yes.
And then every morning, the janitor put on the candle.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a burning candle in the middle of the hall. And it was up, I don't know, 12 feet. It was a big hall.
Yeah.
And there was a big, it was burning at first one, then two, then three, then four.
Right.
And then it was Christmas break. I don't know. We even had wreaths with candles in the classroom if the teacher wanted to.
Right.
Like it was... And at home. And on Sundays, you always had this one candle on.
Well, of course, we can't do that in public schools here, but my...
You could. It's just like you don't.
Yeah. Well, and I know my kids went to Catholic school, elementary school, and so they did. They had... And every morning was an Advent prayer service before school started and so on. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, Advent.
Yeah.
So well, I grew up, too, with an Advent calendar at my house.
Right.
Too.
Now it's coming fashionable.
And that's a German tradition, too, and the best ones come still from Germany. They're harder and harder to find now, but I still try to find...
You go to Aldi, they have
I didn't have to have a candy in it. It was opening the little door to see the picture.
My son has one, yeah. Oh, yeah, we have picture ones or chocolate ones.
Right.
But the best one is if you make one. So if you really love somebody or the children... I have one for my son. You make a string and then little baskets or not baskets, what is that? Bags.
Yeah.
And then it's 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it's in mixed order, and then you have to find your little, and there's tiny little gifts approaching Christmas, and then maybe you get one for Christmas, but it's little things. That's a tradition. But even, by the way, the Christmas tree is actually a German tradition too.
Yes.
So the Tannenbaum, the tree, and then the decorative part.
Well, a lot of the foods, too, that are German, too. I mean, I have a program I'm doing today in Virgus. I'm going to talk about fruitcake and Christmas pudding. the difference between
Stollen.
Well, no, it's a different, bit different. Stollen is not as dense, not as thick as a American fruitcake.
Oh.
But the difference between a steamed pudding, Christmas pudding from, say, the United Kingdom,
okay,
or an American fruitcake, which is like a big brick of with nuts and fruit in it. But the idea of how some of those traditions came to the United Kingdom, to England,
mm-hmm,
or Scotland, Ireland,
mm-hmm,
with Prince Albert moving from Germany and marrying, and Queen Victoria wanted to have those traditions for their children too. And then everyone in England wanting to copy her. Use of some the gingerbread, the Christmas tree, the Christmas carols. I'm trying to think of some of the other foods that we would maybe a goose is that
we eat goose Christmas Day.
Okay, so this too.
And Christmas Eve we actually you have a very spontaneous dinner,
mm-hmm,
like actually cold potato salad and a wiener.
Hors d'oeuvre, just.
Well, that's already
church.
A little fancy,
yeah.
but actually, if you were as a traditionalist, like to have something very simple on Christmas Eve, mm-hmm, to actually reflect as like simple, like you, it's not so rich,
mm-hmm,
and
then the next day a feast.
Then there's a feast. There can be and we eat goose on mm-hmm first mm-hmm tradition. Yeah.
I have a volunteer at the museum who said that her husband would, after Christmas, bring, and so maybe his family was German, I don't know. Mao, M-A-U, that must be it. Is that a German name?
Mao,
yeah. Okay, so after Christmas, when it was time to go to school, he would take goose grease sandwich to school.
Absolutely. That's a Bavarian thing too. Was heißt das? Schmalz.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Schmalz is actually just grease. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's just grease on bread. But he loved that, and I suppose that's
sauce.
A carrying on. Christmas is still
delicious.
Going on, right? He would. So his mother must have saved that.
Yeah.
And he would have that sandwich when he went to school again.
Well, Schmalz. Yeah. It sounds disgusting to people, maybe, but like, yeah, you can order that in Bavaria. Schmalzbrot. It's with a dried onion and mm-hmm and salt. It's actually very delicious. Very hearty.
But if you say goose grease sandwich, say it again, schmaltz?
Schmalz. Yeah, schmalz. Yeah,
then it sounds a little more fancy.
We could try that. Well, I think there was a lot of Christmas stories. Do you have one more to finish this off, or
I don't know.
Should we sing a little? No.
Probably not.
Tannenbaum.
Well, here's another. This is from the high school. Well, let's not breathe that one. I don't know. I don't really have another story.
No, that's okay. We have.
We talked a lot of food. Maybe we should now go and have coffee and some cookies
I think you brought cookies, so we should definitely do that. And I hope everybody has a very Merry Christmas, a very silent Christmas, silent night, reflecting, able to close out 2018, and taking some time to prepare for 2019, and I think we wish all the best for Audete County and for Lakes Country and the whole wild world. Right, Missy? Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you. Same to you, and Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year. Thank you. Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.